So I know I haven't done a podcast in a while. I've really been really enjoying writing. I like the process of writing. It seems less social somehow, which is absurd. Anyway, somebody asked me recently if I would consider doing a podcast on Deleuze's figure of a body without organs. I sort of shy away from explication of philosophical concepts, and that it kind of feels sometimes sort of academic to me, this, I don't know, something about explaining something. Just it doesn't excite me. On the other hand, why the heck not? I picked back up, Logic of Sense and Anti-Oedipus, and I read this stuff in a long time and started, thinking about the body without organs. And I gotta say, I remember when I first read that many years ago now, it was one of the figures within Deleuze, and particularly Deleuze and Guattari, who can be quite difficult and quite esoteric and quite, you sort of you furrow your brow and often feel like, what the fuck? What the fuck are you guys talking about? The rhizome was a very clear figure of theirs, right? It was a sort of a way in, right? They compared the rhizome to the arborescent, to the tree, as, think about these two different models of sense making, of organization, right? So if a tree has a centralized root system from which everything else extends, right? If you kill the root system, you also kill the branch and the leaves. With a rhizome, you have multiple points of entry, right? You have a networked root system, right? For instance, grass, in a field of grass, I can pluck completely out from the roots, including the roots, several blades of grass. The field of grass will not die. That was very clear, very clean to me. Body without organs was another figure that, for some reason, the minute I heard that phrase, the minute I saw that, I just got it. There was something so imagistic about it, and I immediately pictured literally a body without organs. But I realized that, it's a funky sounding, it's a funky sounding figure, and I'm not sure it's a concept. I got to think about that a little bit. What do they mean when they talk about the body without organs? It's not so complicated. It's the body. I would say before, and I'll get to the idea of the temporality of this, but I'll say it's the body before it's been organized into a set of discrete organs with their functions, right? The body that we experience today in modern America, modern world, is a body, again, with organs. A body that's run as a kind of machine. I have my brain, and I have my heart, and I have my liver, and my kidneys, and I think I have a spleen. I think a spleen. I'm not really sure what a spleen does. I have a stomach, and I have a duodenum, and I have my skin. Skin is an organ. And each thing sort of serves its function. And is highly organized system, right? It's distributed, but it's there's first of all kind of a hierarchy, right? There are certain organs don't really need your appendix. But it's also a set of defined spheres, all with their function. And each function is kind of localized to its thing. So the liver doesn't think, right? The liver cleans. The heart pumps, it doesn't think and it doesn't clean. The lungs breathe, they don't think or clean or pump. So each thing has a discrete function that begins to look an awful lot like a factory, if you will, right? A sort of distribution of bodies to sort of build a bigger thing. Body without organs, right? If you take away this sort of our organs, right? My liver, my kidneys, my heart, but also my skin. What I have is a body of streams and flows of desires and sensations and affective tendencies and affective experiences. I feel all kinds of things. I vibrate. I am run through with the mood of the day, you know, the sun begins to set and the wind's blowing and there's a certain irritation in the body, and then, you know, I get an erection and there's a certain flow through my erection and an itch here, and then part of my body is inhabited by other figures, right? Sometimes I feel, you know, as a so-called masculine body, I sometimes feel quite feminine the way I cross my legs or the way I hold myself. I feel myself often channeling or articulating or becoming. It's really, that's the word Deleuze and Guattari use. I feel myself becoming my brother, you know, and when I spend a lot of time with any particular person, such as, you know, my girlfriend, I sometimes say things or do gestures of hers that you know, I feel her speaking through me, right? I am this haunting, this haunted body. But it's not just other people. It's other ways of going. It's trees and rocks and clouds and sky and innumerable possibilities of things my body is just experiencing all the time, right? It is run through. You can picture all these flows coming through me, you know, all the images I've ever experienced in my life just coming at me, affecting me this way and that. I'm nudged by this image. I'm nudged by that image. My heart pounds a little faster here and sends some blood down here. And because I'm without organs, including my skin, I bleed past myself. I remember when my son was first born, we were just home from the hospital, maybe a day or two, and I remember lying with him in our bed, and I was very tired. He was sleeping, and I'm kind of sleeping, and there was this weird kind of exquisite moment. I remember quite clearly, even though the experience itself wasn't lucid, if you will. I remember he kind of stretched his arm, and I stretched my arm, and I there was a brief moment in which I felt indistinguishable from him, indistinguishable from his body, but weirder than that, indistinguishable from him, from his flow of becoming. And of course, a baby is just a stream of functions and desires. It is definitely not a body with organs. It is a body without organs. The body without organs is this ever-moving morass, this flux, this undulation, these waves at different speeds and different intensities, and of different things, of different forces, and different desires that are continuously sort of happening. Of course, as a body with organs and a body within the social, you know, I shut down. You know, I ignore, I put aside, I make sense of these, I want to say irrational, but they're pre-rational, they're post-rational, they never will have been, they're irrational. How about that? They're irrational sensations and affects, right? And, you know, let's say I'm talking to, you know, just say in a client meeting or something, you know, I'm feeling 10,000 things at once, some of which are very clear body with organs, emotional states, highly organized things. I can feel maybe a little insecure, or I can feel like, do I belong here? Do I not belong here? But I still present myself in a certain fashion. That's still the body with organs, that sort of multiplicity of other thoughts or I might be having, even though I'm presenting myself as knowing what I'm doing. But the body without organs is also happening. And sometimes I feel it. While I'm talking, you know, and it's inchoate. It's not as much that it's ineffable, is that it doesn't really speak in our language, right? It groans, it moans, it sighs, it gasps, it sorrows. It does other things. It doesn't yet form itself into these little conceptual avatars, these words. It doesn't. Just as the body with organs takes all this stream, all this flow, all this flux of desire and affect and even, you know, gravity and itches and tickles and longings and bundles them all up into, you know, into behaviors, into a science of the body, about how organs function, into a whole juridical medical experience, the sort of laws of the body, also into existential laws or social laws of how I will comport myself, and what is it to comport oneself as one's body. You don't just begin writhing and drooling and spitting up on the ground, right? That would be something wrong. The body without organs is this highly organized thing, and just as it's organized, the radical disorganization of a certain experience or moment of the body, words organize the kind of morass of syllables and grunts that would emanate from the body at any given time. It just feels this way, it grows, and there's all kinds of things, and then I just go up and down and elongate and groan, and you think about scream therapy, from the 70s, trying to get past, not just past language or break language, but another way to look at scream therapy. And you go in a room and you just fucking scream, would be a way to access the body without organs. Imagine being in a space in which language was not asked for, and in fact language became prohibited, and you were encouraged simply to enunciate and or not as you would or will. Imagine the great breadth, the great variety of sounds that would come from you. These are sounds that come out of us all the time. They come out of us, within the social, right? We have all these inflected groans, that become part of the organized body, part of the organized social body, part of the organized skeletal body. But there are these other sounds that come from us. We're falling asleep when we're kind of in these sort of liminal states, late at night or in the morning, or just sort of spaced out, which you're going, What are those sounds? And I want to suggest that those are sounds of the body without organs, of these other states articulating themselves within the sort of gaps of the organized discourse of the body and its language and its social protocols. One aspect of this body without organs is that it's not a machine that is driven by something that's not the body, right? There's no main driver of the body without organs. That's to say, in the body with organs, and our sort of general, the way we think about our bodies, they are these sort of vehicles in which there is an ego or a self or a brain or a mind or something that is dictating. It's, I decide to move my arm, right? I decide to do things, right? It is something to be used, right? And you can see again how it ties back into a certain economic structure, right? The body's this little factory, and something's driving it to serve a certain purpose. But the body without organs is the body that forms out of and within the sort of cosmic chaos to become this form, in what Umberto Maturana would call autopoiesis, autopoetically, self-construing. The system constructs itself. And as a sort of quick side note, that is one of the things that first really attracted me to Deleuze. And the first book I read was The Fold, and then later with Deleuze and Guattari, and later with Maturana, was that form, the question of form, is that it doesn't have to come from an outside force. So what the heck am I talking about? Think of the Torah, the Pentateuch, you call it the Bible. I could call it the Old Testament. That would mean there's a New Testament, but maybe neither of them are testaments. Anyway, in Genesis, the world is a void. It's without form. And then God begins to give it form, right? There is just this sort of uniform blankness. And then he says, well, there's night and there's day, and there's just distinction. Form comes from an external source, right? It is laid on top of the chaos. What I found in Deleuze and Deleuze and Guattari, and I realized they were taking it or building on it from other people such as Maturana, is a self-construing systems that form just happens. That's not a question of borders and boundaries or chaos. It's not one or the other. Rather, form is always already happening. Form is constitutive of the universe. The universe is constituted by forms, yet these forms are always in motion. They're always changing. They're always in flux. It's not geometric forms. It's calculaic forms. It's shapes in motion and sometimes dissolving and completely vanishing to become other things. A flower grows, it decays, it becomes something else. That's happening all the time. For all bodies in different sort of temporalities. Mountains take a lot longer than you know, mosquitoes, and we take longer than mosquitoes, but we don't take that long compared to a mountain. But the body without organs is the body that emerges from the kind of great team of cosmic flux to become this form. And that form doesn't look like your body when you look in the mirror. Remember, you got no skin, right? So it's not something you can see right now, per se. It is the body with its with desires, with tendencies, with inclinations, with shapes, with a body that's drawn this way and that of its own. It is that shape of the universe becoming as such. The body with organs has attempted kind of to remove itself from the great cosmic chaos to become this sort of discrete unit. I have the skin and I'm bound and I'm this vehicle, and I have a mind and a soul or an identity that will dictate how this body moves through space. And this is, you know, this is the Enlightenment, and this is the very grounds of our socio-political sort of discourse and our understanding, right? Is that I'm this subject, I'm this being, and you know, that is what it is. The body without organs is this body that kind of oozes and bleeds and is not so discreet, and it has tendencies. It doesn't have a will. But it does what it does. It is animated. It is driven in different ways, often all at once, of its own accord. It is a self-constituting being. So right now, you, me, we are these bodies. We are simultaneously bodies without organs, and we are bodies with organs that I can sit here and I can talk and I can explain a philosopher and I can use these words and have my, you know, I can beckon them and, you know, gesture and operate within this organized, and you can see the pun there, an organ and organized, these organized terms of discourse, this organized body. I'm sitting here coherent. I'm not oozing and bleeding and shitting myself, although simultaneously I am a body without organs. I am, you know, I have little allergies and I got this big old nose. And as I make my way through the day, just like many people, you know, my nose runs. I'm leaking, you know, and we try to make the pissing and shitting and coming and blowing our nose as sort of discreet as possible. There are these little things. We excuse ourselves. We go into a separate room. Again, which I'm not against necessarily. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying that there is this other body that leaks. But it doesn't just leak bodily fluids. It also is leaking. It's leaking mood. It's leaking affect. And it's not just leaking, it's leaching. It's taking in, it's giving out. And that doesn't need to be thought of as a leak. It just is emanating. It's flowering. It's flourishing. It might be sick. It might be decaying. It might be rotting. But either way, it is this sort of morass. I keep using this word, morass. I like this word, morass. Morass seems like a body without organs. It itself just sort of can't quite get your hands, your arms around morass. That sounds wrong. We are simultaneously these two bodies. And in fact, I imagine we're many more bodies. We're not just a body with organs and a body without organs. We're all kinds of bodies. And I can imagine a kind of, I don't even know what to call it, a sort of, biological archaeology of all my different sort of bodies and all the different ways it can go. But as I make my way, as we make our way with these two bodies, the question that they sort of ask, that Deleuze and Guattari ask, is not a question of being one or the other, but how do you access this body without organs? How do you tap in? How do you articulate? How do you, either internally or socially, this other body that has so many different desires and inclinations and sensations and feelings all at once? Where does that body exist, and how do I get at it? It will rear its head now and again, and try to sort of put it away. And it's not just the anti-bourgeois body. It's not just Gargantua, trying to sit at the Victorian dinner table. But it's not that. It's a little more complicated than Gargantua. But Gargantua himself is this sort of complicated, farting, shitting, overextended, distended body. And I think of, of a few different sort of practices, Deleuze and Guattari talk about S&M and a certain mode of kink in which the body leaves its sort of, again, its discretion and becomes something that's paddled, something where pain, pleasure, when different kinds of sensations are running through it, so indifferent to the productivity of sex or to the teleology of the orgasm. It's just an experience of sensation in which the body sort of operates in a fundamentally different economy, in different sort of terms with other bodies. They talk about the drug addict, as a kind of body without organs. And I think about drugs and my own drug experiences. But drugs per se are not an entree to the body without organs. I'll tell you a story about friend of mine in college, and he was definitely a character, and had a certain sensitivity to the world, and a certain, wasn't always sort of socially aware, socially astute, or socially gifted. He'd be very charismatic, very handsome, very smart as shit. But give him some cocaine, and he became a parody of the body with organs, right? And cocaine really goes that way, right? And this guy would just, he'd just be talking a mile a minute, dominating the conversation, seeking to sort of territorialize, is the terms Deleuze and Guattari use. He would seek to occupy, own a sort of space of his own ego, of his own discourse, right? And that's, cocaine is not a way to access the body without organs. However, do enough cocaine, or crack, and something else happens, right? You start shitting yourself and sort of spewing beyond yourself, and particularly crack, which, first time I watched a friend of mine smoke crack, he was incredible. He sort of flew off his chair, and was almost, he's laughing and talking, and it was such a morass of things streaming through him. But as he sort of writhed around the room, but then I think back to this one friend of mine who I was talking about earlier, you know, on cocaine. His sort of madness became this highly focused, highly organized, highly territorializing creature. But on LSD, his entire being, his entire ego, his entire being, again, became adrift. He could barely find words. He would drool and mutter, and his body would move almost like a slow motion alien, or as if it had been sort of unhinged from the brain, unhinged from its joints. And he would just say, maybe we should, he couldn't configure himself. He entered the state of just straight becoming, of pre-social, post-social, asocial presence, just this stream, this slur, this blur of becoming. And I would say at those states, he was becoming the body without organs. The body without organs was rupturing his organs, rupturing his coherence, taking his language. And he became just sort of this, here it comes, this morass of flesh and groans and tears and gestures that were peculiar. So, you know, drugs have this kind of multiple function. It depends on the drug, it depends on the body, it depends on the circumstance. They can become a way to sort of unleash, you know, especially at the levels, at the limits of certainly propriety, of limits of a body containing itself. You sort of push yourself and you're just this sort of incoherent mess. That is a kind of body without organs. But just as often, you know, drugs become the opposite. They become this means of high organization, you know, and I think this is what, you know, Silicon Valley and contemporary capitalism is really discovering, that they can put drugs to use to make us more productive. Right, to make us, you know, everybody's micro dosing LSD here in the Bay Area, and they're doing it so they can become more creative and create a new app. What always interested me about certain aspects of the psychedelic experience was precisely that collapse, that rupture, that fraying of propriety and of the limits of my body and how my body could organize itself. It became organized in these different fashions. So that's drugs. And drugs can go a lot of different ways. And I think we could probably do, again, an elaborate sort of taxonomy of drugs and then different modes of accessing the body without organs. And the one, to be honest, that interests me right now is yoga. And I don't do a lot of yoga. I think about yoga. I don't do a lot of yoga, but I am. My life is deeply enmeshed with a yogi who's really been doing this a very long time and thought a lot about this and began to clue me in that yoga is not just about aligning my body with a pose, which would be very much the body with the organs. Very much about. Following a regime of situating my body along certain prescriptive axes. That's what I sort of imagined, in a certain sense, I guess yoga to be. I guess I hadn't thought about it all that much, but I think that's how many people imagine it. It's sort of a way to get fit. It's a way to heal an injury. But another way to think about yoga, I think, is through, for me, the experience of meditation and yoga as a meditative practice. And you know, I think there are different ways of approaching meditation, and I think some of them can be highly organized. But there's a way in which one aspect, one possibility of meditation and of the meditative experience is to feel everything that's streaming through the body happen as it happens. The things you hear, the things you see, I used to always close my eyes, and my yogi master suggests leaving my eyes open, but soft, unfocused, right? And when you focus just so, which is you don't focus, but your eyes are open, the space that is always so organized, that's the lamp, that's the bed, that's the cushion, that's the light, begin to blur, right? And this highly organized space, this room with organs, begins to become a series of flows where the reflection of this begins to bleed with the reflection of that. And the room becomes, again, a series of colors, temperatures, intensities, moods, and flows that all begin to work with each other, against each other, indifferent to each other in this kind of endless stream. And, you know, you're sitting there, I'm sitting there, and it's not about thinking about it or not thinking about it. It's about experiencing the body as it happens, as it will come. And it seems if you extend that to yoga, so I'm no longer just sitting there on my ass, but to a particular kind of yoga, to asana, to poses, which is one kind of yoga that we mostly think of. It's just doing certain poses, like the downward facing dog and such. We're putting ourselves in a certain position in which our bodies will experience different things. Things it might not be used to experiencing. If your hands over here and your head's over here, and it might not be an elaborate pose, but it's just simply a pose that is not already figured by everyday life, right? It's a strange position. You wouldn't normally be doing that. You're sort of inviting a different set of sensations. You're accessing a different set of sensations. And I believe, and I'm going to sound totally naive, and I welcome anybody putting me in my place, that there are, there's this idea of chakras, of these sort of energetic flows that run through the body. And that begins to sound like the body without organs, of these flows. But of course, the chakra system itself begins to reorganize the sort of the chaotic flow into a system, right? And of course, this is what happens with any discipline. Just like a drug can turn you from this sort of loosey-goosey, incoherent thing into a thing that's too coherent, man. Just, you know, the finance guy blowing lines as he's making the deal, right? You're too coherent. A discipline such as yoga can, it seems to me, can do the same thing. That the discipline begins to organize the morass, the sort of chaos, the sort of the flux of the body into a coherent system. And I can see why, my girlfriend who is this teacher, she talks about the pleasure of teaching beginners. She likes teaching beginning yogis, you know, people first doing it, because they're experiencing all kinds of things. They're yet to be enculturated. They're yet to be disciplined to become someone who's just executing the postures. And it's not that someone who's more experienced is always doing that. And I found the same thing when I was teaching. I liked teaching undergraduates, underclassmen who were just experiencing the ideas I was talking about, the rhizome and Nietzsche's will to power. And there was a kind of palpable kind of energetic flourishing that would sort of come from them, as opposed to graduate students for whom everything's already... It's literally, you study a discipline. What's your discipline? I study 19th century British literature. It's already organized. I liked the disorganization of ideas, the disorganization of books. It didn't set me up well for, an academic career. But it's why I like teaching undergraduates, because for them it's just this fresh thing that's emanating through them and tearing them apart and reorganizing them. And I think this is the same thing for my yogi master and for her teaching young people, because it hasn't yet been disciplined, right? And all of this is to say that, the body without organs, is not disciplined. It is this self-construing, ever-shifting, flux, messy body. And it's a body that's not even a body. You know, we talk about a body without organs, but because it's without skin, it begins to sort of bleed into other bodies and into other things and into the cosmos itself. It's continuous with the ocean. It's continuous with the sky. It's continuous with the sand. It's continuous with a dog. It's continuous with another body. I think, you know, deep in the throes of sex, we can discover this body without organs, which we're not ourselves anymore. We're not these organized systems. We are just a continuous flow that doesn't begin or end with my skin, begin or end with my hands, but flows with my my cohort at the time. This is the experience of the body without organs. I think it's always there. I think if you try to access it all the time too much, I think it can become terrifying. Like my friend in the throes of an acid trip, and he doesn't know where he is or who he is, and there's times he experiences great pleasure, but often great fear. There's a madness there, right? Because it's sort of completely outside of the sort of, the tethers, social tethers, the ego tethers, the societal tethers that keep us sort of coherent. At the same time, there's something very beautiful and liberating and I would say pleasurable, but it's not just pleasure. There's an enjoyment of the body without organs. And I don't think, we could get into whether the body without organs is this primal thing versus the societal thing later. I'd rather have it be these two things sort of at once. We are these two bodies. We are the body that is this morass, and we are this body that is organized. And it's, we lean one way or another, and I think day to day, of course, we lean into the body with organs, but some of us, and all of us to some degree, and some of us to a greater degree, try to access this body without organs for a sort of surge, for a sort of seething of vitality. I leave you on the way out with some music by a band called Boredoms, Japanese sort of, I don't know quite how to describe them, but they seem to me to perform the body without organs well. Oh, my God.